welcome to the 50 Shades of Trade podcast, the show that brings you unique insights into running a service business. Each week, I'll be talking to business owners from all kinds of backgrounds. They'll share with you what works, what doesn't, and how to overcome big challenges in business. If you run a service business, this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Matt Franklin, CEO and founder of Payaka. This week, I spoke to Craig Brooks, who runs the highest rated double glazing company in Sheffield with over 400 five-star reviews. That business is called Correct Choice Windows and Doors.
Okay, hello, Craig Brooks. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
One of the things that really attracted me to get you on board with us was how transparent and open you are about business. Obviously, you now run Correct Choice Windows and Doors, but I think your background and how you ended up landing in this position, founding this company with your co-founder, I think is a really interesting one. And I'd really like to start off by just getting a bit of background from you. How has your career moved from where you started to where you are today? And then I think it'd be really interesting to dive into some of the challenges you faced and how you've overcome them.
Yeah, so I mean, I left school, no qualifications, Matt, straight out of school. I think it was, you've got 2 weeks to get a job or you're out of house. So I went and got a job and kind of found myself in construction and just, you know what I mean, gaining a wage and things like that. When the recession kicked in quite a while ago, there was a kind of no work and it was all panic stations. So I went for a door knocking job. I went for a door to door sales job, which was quite intimidating. I kind of, it wasn't for me, but I made it work. And I quickly became one of the best door-to-door salesmen in the UK for a broadband company. And then I found myself in sales. Been in sales for around about 12 years and kind of got the love and the passion of training, going to the gym and one of them where you're not going to pass your personal training, you're not smart enough, you're not clever enough. And I did. And I passed it with flying colours and got offered a job out of all the group. Was personal training for a while and then ended up training a customer who made a proposition to me and said, look, why don't me and you go into business and open a gym? And at that time, that was my passion. It was something that I wanted to achieve by the time I was 30, I was 26. And I thought, you know what, let's do it. Kind of didn't do any due diligence or anything like that and jumped into a gym and opened a gym, which quickly was the incorrect decision. And I found myself kind of in a position where I had to make a choice of selling that business or potentially getting my hands burnt. Found myself back in employment and landed in a very sort of, I don't know, working for a narcissistic CEO, it was just one of them environments where it just wasn't suited to me. And I fell into double glazing and it just happened. It was like the stars aligned, Matt, and something told me to go for the jump and to go for it. And I ended up doing some sales for a company, which again, I thought he was a good guy and it turned out he wasn't. He was doing quite a lot of hard double glazing sales tactics with elderly people and things like that. And that's how I met my business partner. I was learning how to fit the products, learning how the products went in while selling them, which I was very good at because I was doing everything different to what he told me. He was saying, do all these sales tactics, all these pressure sales, don't move house, don't go out of here. And I didn't do any of that and just kind of presented the product to people and went, do you want to buy it or not? That's how much it is. And they were like, yeah, well. Then we found out it was quite not an honest guy, and that's when me and my business partner at the minute just looked at each other one day and went, let's do this ourselves. We can offer something different to this industry. And that's how Correct Choice was born, really.
So when you started doing door-to-door sales in that first role, did you get training there, or how, like, were you just sort of thrown in at the deep end?
It was a role where it was kind of, you went into it with a blindfold on. They was telling you that you're going to get management, you're going to own your own business. It was kind of like a pyramid scheme sort of door-to-door sales where all day for probably 6 hours, I didn't even know what I was doing. I didn't even know why I was there. I thought I was going for this office job. And it was like a big con. It was like to try and pull you in and then to show you money. And there were just certain steps throughout the process of the whole day where it was to try and lure you in. It was absolutely mental. I probably don't even think that them sort of environments are around anymore. I just can't see it happening. I can't see it being allowed. They were like something off the Wolf of Wall Street. Seriously, they were mental. They were mental.
How did you do so well at it? Because you said you sort of, you know, was that all self-taught kind of?
Yeah. Rebuilt, so it's same again, everyone suited and booted, briefcases, doing all these sort of sales tactics of keep it short, sweet, simple, being indifferent, being doing this and like practicing all these sales techniques for like 3 hours in the morning, all stood in an office, clapping each other and pitching each other. And I'd just be like, you're all right. Do you want free broadband? Because you can get free broadband now. It's open at your exchange. Okay. What do you mean? Yeah, can I just come in? Bang, sign them up, done. And I was really good at it because everybody else was trying to do all these other different ways to get around people. It's free broadband in your area. You just pay 30 quid and then you can have free broadband. Do you want to sign up? Yeah. And it was just that easy. It was easy.
It does sound like quite a good one to be selling, to be honest.
Well, it was just one of them where, same again, I think in sales, everybody makes sales hard. I think they really try and focus on pushing the sale rather than helping people to buy. I've got a really big thing now that I think that if your product is good, if you've got something to offer, if you're different, yeah, and if you can present that in a fashion that the consumer gets all that data and can see it all, you have no control whether or not they sign up. You can force them, you can push them. It ends up in cancellations, it ends up in buyer's remorse. I want people to say, that is shit, or I want that product. Oh, you, thank you, go on. Because it's the easiest seller you can possibly do. Let people buy. That's how I see things nowadays.
So what did your process look like when you go out to say, presumably someone gets in contact with you and you go out for that initial, I guess, survey? How does that kind of end-to-end process look like from a sales point of view?
So I could easily get a sales team straight away, no problem. But I like a little bit of chaos. I like to be out and about. I like to keep my mind busy just for my own sort of mental purposes. But it's one of them where it's a very, very simple process. You ring up, I go out, I'll take the measurements, take your requirements. I'm probably in your house 20, 25 minutes. If you want to stand and talk, that's fine. I'm usually out of someone's property within 30 minutes. I'll go back to the office and I'll simply just put it into the suppliers, get the quote, send them an email. That's it. I give all the information. I make all the information so they can clearly do their own research. I promote people to do their own research. Everybody who walks in the property is going to tell them that their windows, their doors, their conservatory roofs are the best. That's fine. Well, here's the information to show you that ours are. If you want to do your own research, that's fine. You will clearly see it. You've only need to type us in on Google to be able to see his reputation. So I try and allow people to be able to do their own research, type us in Google, have a look, see us on YouTube, and build the confidence up themselves. I believe that if we lose the deal or we don't get the deal, which we don't get everyone, and if you do, then you are doing something wrong if you're winning every deal, because you just simply are you too cheap or there's something wrong if you're winning everything. I believe it comes down to price. I don't really want to know what the consumer's budget is. It's got nothing to do with me. I don't care how much you've got. I don't care how much you own. I don't care if you live in £1 million house or an £80,000 house. It's irrelevant. This is my product. This is how much it is.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of the stuff you put out about just saying, just Google us. And now you've built up all of those reviews there. It's just such a powerful thing to get people to just do their own research and see.
I've had this conversation with a couple of people before saying, well, you should know people's budget. You should know what they want to spend. You should know this. I know I don't, because I don't want to ever get into a conversation or ever get into a position where someone feels that I've maybe have manipulated a price based on what they've said, because our industry is horrendous. Double glazing is horrendous. It is a proper, hideous and horrible industry. And that's why I find it so easy. But if you were to have 10 quotes and tell everybody that your budget was £10,000, I bet 9 of them quotes would come in at £10,000.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I don't really need to know that. I don't need to know what you've been quoted. I don't want to know what your budget is. I don't want to know anything. You've rang us up for a purpose. You've reached out to us for a purpose. And that's because you obviously have seen the reviews, and let's take it further and let's see what we can do for you.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're now at the point where everybody knows if they're asked what their budget is, it makes them feel uncomfortable, because they kind of think, well, you know, why are you asking that? Is it because like you're going to go away and just figure out how to maximize your price to hit that point?
And I mean, I never want that. I never want that to come into the equation, because it's just something that's not, it's nothing to do. It's just so dodgy, isn't it? Such a dodgy question. And so many people over LinkedIn and in the business world have really pushed and promoted for me to be investigating what people's budget is. No, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I get asked all the time if we, you know, occasionally we work with third parties, maybe they're doing a bit of design work for us, and you'd get the same question every time. And to be honest, I always refuse to answer it, because I'm like, I'm looking to solve this problem. I want to know how much you're going to charge for it. I want to know what you're going to deliver. And yeah, you're right. It's just, it is a dodgy question. You mentioned that you know, at some point you want to go national. Did you mean that? Or like, because you also said you were super happy with what you've got. Like,
that was the plan. I mean, that was the plan. It was like, let's do this. We've got something amazing. Everybody will love us. We've been on LinkedIn a while now as well. I mean, just from the leads alone that I get from LinkedIn, just from the messages off LinkedIn alone, we would have work all over the country. I've been offered so much work. I mean, I've been offered 300 houses in Scotland. It's just 300 houses. 300 houses to reglaze. I want you to do it. You're the man to do it. I don't care about anybody. I'm just like, no, don't want it, because it's too far. There's so much work all over the place that we could take off LinkedIn. But for me personally, me and when we talk to other people, me and my business partner, we don't want it anymore, because it's just now, it doesn't interest us, because we're kind of content. We've created something where we get paid well. We get to enjoy this weekend. We haven't got a mega, mega, mega amounts of stress. And I don't know, sometimes you just got to say, let go. I don't know, just go with the flow. Don't force things. Just, I'm all about it being organic. If it happens and I need to get another couple of sales team, or I need to get another couple of fitters, I just rather let it organically happen and let it sort of happen, and then turn around and go, wow, well, we cover 100 miles now in Sheffield. We cover 150 miles of Sheffield. At minute, we're covering 50 miles of Sheffield. And just let it gradually expand itself. But I'm definitely not going to force it or go on the hunt for it.
Mm. Yeah, sounds good. So correct choice windows and doors you've made a success of. It'd be really interesting to go into the personal training business and what went wrong there, and see if we can learn something from that.
I just got in business with the wrong partner. I jumped in feet first. Followed my sort of passion, got excited. And I think you'll agree as well, Matt, is that when you've been in business a while, it kind of matures you. You think differently. You see all things different. And my patience is a lot thinner than nowadays. And I've kind of, I don't know, it just kind of dilutes everything and makes you kind of more focused on things. That's what it's done to me, business. At that time, it was kind of jumped into the opportunity without sitting down, thinking about it. Is this person the right person? Should I do my due diligence on them? Should I look at this? Should I look at that? Are we getting the correct business? Are we getting the correct premises? And it was just jumped in. I got an opportunity and I jumped in with it, and I quickly found in my heart and in my gut, it told me it was the wrong thing that I'd done. So I sold my share, made my money back and a little bit more money, and then kind of fell back into employment. But quickly after that, around about 6-7 months later, that business went under. If it was my business and I bought him out and I took over that business, would have probably still been going today. But it was just the wrong partner. He said he'd pay the bills, he'd take care of this in the background, he'd take care of that. All I needed to do was just personal train and run the business day to day. And it didn't feel like a job at that time, because I enjoyed it. I loved it. I loved doing that. But yeah, gut feeling again, gut feeling kicked in. and I just went with it. It was a hard decision. It caused me a lot of sort of mental health problems as well, because I put my heart and soul into it, and yeah, it did a little bit of damage.
Yeah. So, did you think about buying him out, or was that an option for you? Or is that something that you?
I did, but because I got to the point where I couldn't actually stand the bloke, yeah, and I couldn't, I didn't even want to be in the same room as him because of what I knew he'd done. I mean, when you're getting people coming around saying, "Oh, you owe £1,500 on your electric," then you as an individual have been friends with suppliers of like protein powders and built all these suppliers up before going into that business, and they're ringing you up saying bills haven't been paid, he's ripped us off. It's like, wow, you're damaging my contacts, you're damaging the people that I know that I've built around this. So when it got to the point of him saying, well, he did originally start with, "I want you to buy me out, Craig," and he gave me a ridiculous figure. It was like ridiculous. Whereas if he'd sold it to me, that gym, he would have been sat at home laughing. And I just went, well, no, you're going to buy me out because I'm done. So you're going to buy me out. And it kind of put it on his toes. And he thought about it, obviously seeing everything that I'd built around it and thought he could do it, but he couldn't. And I had the last laugh.
Yeah, the sort of mental health challenges that you mentioned, I think it's an important area that people are starting to talk a little bit more about, but haven't talked about, you know, enough historically. Is it something that you managed to get help with, or did you just deal with it yourself? And yeah, how did you approach that?
It was one of them things where it took other people around me to say, "You are suffering with depression. You have got massive anxiety," and it was a kind of a build up over a number of years from when I sold that gym to actually realizing, being a sort of 30-year-old bloke, building up sort of to the point where you want to do your dream, you know what I mean, and then getting back into an employed role and going to work, doing the grind after being self-employed for so long, it was kind of demeaning. It kind of caused a lot of damage. So for me, it kind of took many years to accept it. And it was just looking at on YouTube videos. It was just talking to people. It was just opening up to friends, telling people how I felt, speaking about it. And kind of being open about it, and then realizing what was happening and accepting it and learning to accept it. If I'm having a shit day, just have a shit day. Yeah, sit on settee, don't do no work, stay away from people, do something what makes me happy, go and train, rather than trying to hide it in my own brain kind of thing. So, I mean, I never went and got an actual help from any doctors or anything like that because I just find it so generic. You go to a GP or anything like that, and it's just so generic. If you need help with something like that, you need to go to a specialist. And I felt that going down the GP route would have just prolonged it. So I wanted to do something about it myself.
Yeah, it sounds like you were, it was good that you had that network of people around you that were able to sort of advise that you know, there was something that you could deal with there.
Well, it was my wife. It was my wife. She just, you know what I mean? Just kind of put it on my toes one day. This is what it is. It's depression. It's this. And to be fair, I never really knew what it was. I just kind of lost all taste for life. Everything was a bit grey. Couldn't be bothered. No energy. And kind of felt really bad. Until I kind of realized what it was, did my own little bit of research, looked at things, videos, listened to podcasts. And I was just drilling my brain constantly. Every other day, walking with a dog, you know what I mean, listening to other people talk about their experiences and how to get over things and the way of thinking and talking about gratitude and, do you know what I mean, how we can practice gratitude, law of attraction, just loads of mad things to try and find some sort of balance in my brain where when I stopped listening to it or reading about it, I was like, okay, I feel better. And that's what I did.
That's cool. And you talk about it a bit on social media and your sort of work on social media. Is it just a kind of a natural thing where you just talk about what's on your mind, or do you have any kind of like sort of strategy there about what kind of things that you're talking about any given time?
So, I mean,
it kind of acts a little bit like a diary, doesn't it? Talking about things and getting them out there and getting a response from people. I mean, everybody's on social media for a reason. Everybody's on social media for attention. And whether that's attention to the product, the service, attention to themselves, yeah, whatever, it's still attention what they're looking for. And when you're talking about these sort of problems or these experiences and you're getting other people saying, I felt like that, that's how I was, and things like that, is, I don't know, it's, you get a good feeling from it. I never want to feel like I felt a couple of years ago again. I never want to feel like that. And I could understand why suicide in males is so high. I could understand why we've got such a problem. Yep. Because people, especially men, don't talk about it. And it is cliche, but talking does help. Once you've got it off your mind, once you've spoke to somebody, once somebody's listened, once somebody can actually say, yeah, I felt like that, buddy, or I've been through that, you're not alone anymore, are you? So I don't mind talking about it. There's things that I don't need to talk about. You don't need to know what I've got, what I own, how much money I've got, where I live. You don't need to know any of that. But when it comes down to my experiences, is if that can help somebody, and that can help somebody to get up off the city or get out of bed and go, you know what, I've got a problem, I felt like that, or I suffer with anxiety, or that's a good idea, or I never thought of doing that, or yeah. And the amount of messages, the amount is unreal that I've had just through LinkedIn alone. Because I feel that LinkedIn is the perfect outlet, the perfect channel to talk about things like that. You talk about things like that on Facebook, nobody wants to know. Everybody wants to see you fail on Facebook. It's not the same audience. They don't care. Talk to people on LinkedIn and you get more sort of refined response. People are there to learn, engage, and to sort of grow, aren't they?
I think it really helps to talk about this. And it's really commendable to see you just going out there and talking about it, and hopefully that helps anyone listening. And
some of the messages that I've received, Matt, it's just been like, wow. I've actually told these people, you need to go and see a professional, like, now. You need to go and see. And sometimes it makes me feel a little bit like, do you know what I mean? Some of the messages are a little bit intense. But somebody looking to you to speak to you, and they're looking to open up. And they obviously must respect me to send me their messages. So for me to say, look, get up, go and see a professional, it might be the message they need to make that change and to potentially save their life. So
yeah, sure, cool. So the last thing I want to talk about is your charity fight. You're doing an MMA charity fight. Is that something that you've done before? What motivated you to get into this?
A little bit weird, really. We've just come out of lockdown, haven't we? 2 years of doing absolutely nothing. And I don't know, it comes off the back of the side of depression. I feel a lot better nowadays. I know how to manage my own mental health. And I don't want to die anymore. Yeah, I want to live. Do you know what I mean? I want to have some experiences. I want to do as much as I possibly can. So when we come out of lockdown, I basically said, any sort of opportunity, any way that I can push myself, I'm going to go for it. Seeing an opportunity where it, number one, raises money for cancer research, and also pushes myself as well. And I'm going to be doing something that a lot of people aren't going to do, or can't do, or won't do. And it's getting a little bit intense. I mean, I'm sat here today and I feel absolutely battered. I can hardly walk. I've hurt my foot. I've pulled my side. I've pulled my ribs. But we've raised a substantial amount of money for cancer research already. We're over the £3,000 mark. And that is only in sort of 3 weeks. So I didn't even think £100. I could raise £100. Yeah. And same again, the power of LinkedIn. I put that on LinkedIn, and within a matter of a day, it was over £2,000. So yeah, it's something to be. I'm really proud of it. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens. Awesome.
Have you had a MMA fight before, or is this?
No. I've never got in the ring and had a proper like sort of amateur fight or professional fight or anything like that. I've been a lad's lad though, Matt. Do you get what I mean? I've lived a little bit, mate, when I was younger, and I wouldn't be shy to a little bit of a ruckus when I was younger, but that's long gone now. I'm not that sort of man anymore. So let's see what happens. Win, lose or draw, the main priority in this is to raise as much as I possibly can for cancer research.
So when's it taking place?
13th of May. So 13th of May, Friday the 13th. And it's at the same place as well where I got married, believe it or not, which is just weird. So it's at the Hilton.
Cool. In Sheffield.
Yeah.
Awesome. We'll drop a link so people can chuck a bit of money in. Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem.
Any parting words of wisdom for anyone running a business, thinking about starting a business?
It's a funny one. It could be a long answer again, Matt, but I think everything should be run on gut feeling. Don't be that person, that man, that woman that really can't sing and the mum and dad stood there going, yeah, you're really good. And they're the only person encouraging you. If you know you've got something good, if you know you've got a good product, if you know you've got a good service and that gut feeling is telling you to go for it, then go for it, because it could be a life-changing experience for you, because that's what it's done for me. I woke up one morning and went, now is the time. I need to do this. I've got the money. I've got the funds. I can do it. And it changed my life and my family's life.
Cool. If you're looking for windows and doors in the Sheffield area, just give Correct Choice and Windows a Google. All the evidence is there.
That's the sales pitch. That's the sales pitch. Give us a Google. That's it.
Give them a Google. Cool. Thanks very much, Craig. Cheers.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Can you do me a quick favour? If you're listening to the show, please hit the follow or subscribe button. It helps all the guests that you're listening to on the show, and it helps us deliver more episodes full of top business tips.